The Faith Element Podcast, Episode 7.24, The Best for Last, focusing on the text for June 14, 2015. Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast. I'm David Cassidy. I work with the great team at Faith Lab, and I'll be your host for this episode.
We're glad you're with us today. This podcast is designed to help you take a look at a particular passage of Scripture that follows along with the Faith Element Bible Study Series. Or if you're not following along with that at all, it's perhaps just an opportunity to do some personal Bible study through our podcast. We have some interesting people here today to talk about an interesting passage. We have Nikki Hardiman, who is writer and on-screen personality for Faith Element's Bible background video and a minister in Forsyth, Georgia. Hello, Nikki.
Hey David.
And we also have Bert Montgomery, who is an author, pastor, and professor in Starkville, Mississippi. Hey, Bert.
Hi, David.
How are we doing?
I'm doing great, doing great. Just wrapped up another semester.
Well, that's a good feeling.
It is.
We also have with us Daniel Glaze, who is a husband, father, and pastor from Eastern North Carolina. Greetings, Daniel.
Hey, David.
Last episode, we were talking about a very familiar passage from Genesis in the Garden of Eden. This week, the passage is not as well known, is it, Nikki?
No, I don't think so. It's not a common passage we often use. It comes from the book of Ezekiel, chapter 17, and the focus is on verses 22 through 24. And it's really a lovely passage. It comes to the people, to the Israelites, at a time in which they are in exile. And we've talked about this on Faith Element before for those who follow along. The time of exile, when they were in exile, they lost everything. Everything that told them who they were as a people. They lost the temple, which is where they understood that God's presence resided among them. They had lost their land, which had been promised to their ancestors long ago. And they had lost the monarchy. The Davidic monarchy, and all three of those things were vital to their understanding of who they were. And so here they are in exile. They've lost all of those things. And the prophet Ezekiel is there to assure the people that even though they feel as though they've completely been abandoned by God, that God is still about doing new work, and God is still working to bring them home.
So a word of hope to a people that really needed it.
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's what this passage is, the primary thrust of this passage is. One of the beautiful images that shows up in the passage, I love it when Scripture gives us new images of God, ones that we don't often hold on to. And so here, God is described as someone who tends trees. In the area I work in Forsyth, Georgia, but I live in Macon, Georgia, and there's this beautiful park downtown. And a few years ago, it wasn't so beautiful. And they've come about doing in the last 3 years, they've planted over 100 trees in this park. Wow. And it's beautiful. And I'm a part of, lovely social media. I'm a part of a Facebook group following the progress at this park and everything they're doing. And there's been so much focus on the trees. And I've learned a lot from them just about how to care for trees and how much energy and work goes into that. And so when I was looking at this passage, those kind of things all came together for me. And so it's this beautiful picture of God who's caring for trees, knowing when to prune them, knowing when to water them, how to care for them. And the image is that God is about sprouting new things from these trees. I've really kind of fallen in love with that image of God from this passage.
Well, one thing I think, the idea of hope is so prominent in this passage. I think people of faith largely have a good grasp of holy hope. But I think it's good to remind ourselves that when we talk about hope, the idea that the hope that we as people of faith have, it's not this Pollyannish, pie in the sky hope. You know, I hope I win the lottery. I do well on my final exam. You know, this hope comes from, I think, God being true to God's word and being true to us as his children throughout the years. But I tell you, sometimes though, you know, when life just deals you a raw hand, and certainly I think the folks in our passage probably felt like they had been dealt a raw hand and certainly had been abandoned. You know, sometimes hope is all you have, as wonderful as it can be. Sometimes when that hope doesn't materialize, hope can also break your heart. But I think we as a people of faith are called to hope. I think there's a reason we start our Advent season with hope, to again call to mind not just an obligation we have to hope, but the great joy that we have in hoping with God for a new day.
Yeah, and for me, that hoping for a new day, at some point, as Daniel mentioned, not some Pollyanna thing, but somehow hope has a deeper meaning than simply tomorrow is going to be different. I mean, I think it has that meaning, but theologically, you know, I remember the Holocaust survivor Elie Wiesel tells a story of someone being, the Nazis were hanging a child, and someone asked him, a Jewish person who had given up on faith because all hope seemed to have been lost, and said, "Where is God now while this child is a child, an innocent child is hanging?" And Elie Wiesel said, "God is there with that child." And there's something about the presence of God with us through the worst of the worst that gives that some of us, I think, we could find hope to keep going, even if things don't change. You know, you read stories about people surviving concentration camps, and there is no guarantee that things were ever going to change for them. They may have survived and been liberated, but they didn't know that, but yet they didn't succumb to despair. And that, when I was reading the text and reading, thinking about this, I thought of one of my favorite movies is The Shawshank Redemption, where Tim Robbins plays Andy, a good, upstanding citizen who goes to jail for murdering his wife. He maintains his innocence throughout, but you get to see all these other people who have learned a certain way of all these other prisoners who are there for life or for long periods, who give in to a sort of cynicism and despair and then just survive. And Andy somehow never gives in to that cynicism and despair. At one point they ask him about it, and he says, "Hope," this is a great quote, one of my favorites, "hope is a good thing, perhaps the best of all good things, and no good thing ever dies." And I won't give it away, but things end up, you know, it's a good ending for Andy, but even there was no guarantee it was going to end for him, and he knew there was no guarantee it would end happy for him. But somehow there was something about something inside of him that they couldn't strip away, a dignity or something, that he would never give in to cynicism or despair. And I think for me, when I talk about hope, it has to involve the gritty reality of the worst of human nature and what we will do to each other. And that everything is lost, and feeling like the people in our text today. So why even bother? And yet, hope has a meaning to bother, to keep going in spite of everything. I don't know how to put it in words, but that, for me, hope has to have a gritty reality of God being with that child being crucified. What does that mean? I mean, for all the people in our text who are having so many terrible things happening all around them, why is there, what are you talking about hope? Tell me tomorrow's going to be better, but how does that affect who I am today?
Yeah, hope is hard. I think that it is, it's such a beautiful concept, the idea of having hope, but when you really, really, really need it, it's hard. It's hard to hold on to. And I mean, I have a friend who she'll often say, "I don't want to hope for that because I don't want to be disappointed." And I know a lot of people kind of live that way. And certainly there've been moments in my life where, you know, dare I hope that something that I want, come to fruition. But I like this, Bert, I like what you're talking about, this, the grit that comes with hope makes it more real and more tangible. The, you know, you both referenced that kind of Pollyanna kind of hope that I think is hard to hold on to. It it's a little bit like cotton candy, you know, it goes in your mouth and then all of a sudden it's gone. And it's sweet for a minute, but when you need hope, there's gotta be something to hold on to. And I think sometimes that's hard. I think that's hard to do. And I think that the prophet in this text is trying to give the people some handles, trying to help them, give them some things to hold on to think about, some images that help the people connect to what God is doing with them and among them. And I guess for me, that begs the question, so what are our handles today? How do we talk about where God is in the midst of challenging things that happen around us? I mean, there's so much, there's always something happening that feels terrible and horrible and kind of like it's the end. And right now, there's a lot going on in our world. Nepal, the earthquake that happened there, and all the destruction that we see there, and the challenges that Baltimore and so many other cities are facing in our country. Those people in those situations need hope. And I guess it makes me think about, how do we talk about where God is found in the midst of those kinds of situations in our world today?
Thank you for mentioning that, Nikki. I really, I don't know that I have a satisfactory answer, but your call for us to realize that there are parts of our world where it may seem that all hope is lost, but that may be where hope is needed most. Without being flippant about the terrible tragedy that are happening in other parts of the world, I think the reality is that if we as people live long enough, we will all have stories of hope that has crashed.
Absolutely.
But maybe it's the preacher in me. We cannot stop hoping because of what we know to be true, that nothing is over until God says it's over. And that's not just to paint too rosy a picture on it. That's the way God has always been. God is not finished creating, so that dream is not dead. And will we have days when we can't get out of bed? Yes. You know, hope doesn't mean everything's going to be fine and rosy, but hope does tell us that we are not alone, and that the way things are now is not the way they have to be, and that sounds like a lot of lofty language from a place of privilege, but I believe that as foundationally as I believe anything else, part of our job as folks, you know, with hope, is to help bring and share that hope where it is needed most, to uncover it in those places in our world. You mentioned places like Nepal, our own cities and towns that are struggling, violence at the hands of police, protests and counter-protests. Gosh, I don't want to sound too naive about it, but it's long past time that we start hoping for a new day. And that's what I think this passage is talks a lot about.
You said, I don't want to sound too naive. And I think that a lot of Christians struggle with that. We, and maybe it's because the people who proclaim a more shallow Pollyanna, if that's the word we're going to use today, a hope, are louder than others. They kind of have the louder voice in our culture. And I think that a lot of Christians are afraid to proclaim exactly the kind of hope that you're talking about, because we worry that it won't sound sufficient. So even if we believe that it is absolutely the word that people need to hear, culture has watered it down, and we don't know how to talk about it without all of the baggage that our time and culture has placed on it. But I think you're absolutely right. I believe, I mean, in the faith element curriculum, I pull from Buechner, who said it better than anyone, the worst things in this world are not the last. I don't think that's exactly the quote, but that rings very true for me. It rung true for me before I had worst things happen in my life. But my husband and I, we lost a baby, and that really was one of those worst things. It was awful. And it wasn't the last. It wasn't the end of our story. And in a lot of ways, it wasn't even the end of that child's story. I hope that we can find ways to talk about this hope that we carry, because I think that it is what the world needs, especially in those dark places.
So part of what I hear you saying is we may have a harder time than we should saying where we see God at work. I mean, we talked about God as this gardener, this tender of trees, mm-hmm. Earlier on. And I mean, do we see God at work still in our world?
I do. For me, it connects. Well, when we did experience our loss, God showed up in the people who were there for us, and people showed up in all kinds of different ways, and they contributed to us, and they helped us along. And whether it was a card or a meal or a beautiful bouquet of flowers, or I had one friend who she came over every 3 or 4 or 5 days to make sure I had on new clothes and I was showering. I mean, you know, God showed up in people in the community of faith, and that's where I usually see it the most. But I also see, as a mother, I have 2 small children, and I see God at work in them, in the ways that they're learning and the things that they're asking. And
Nikki, I remember you and I were having a conversation some weeks ago about the ability for us either to do it or not to do it, to visualize a new and better world.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, because, you know, some of us work with young people and wondering, can a new generation really see a new world, a new way of life, see things changing in a way that's meaningful?
Yeah. I mean, you know, having done youth ministry and now teaching at a college, there is a level of a certain sense of we can make a difference. And, you know, the older ones of us could say, well, just, you know, keep on, then you'll get jaded and cynical because we've been there. But there is a sense of a hope for a better tomorrow that pops up in every new generation, and it does move us along. And a lot of us older folks who've been jaded need to be reminded of that. And I think Nikki hit the nail on the head when she talked about community, because sometimes we just think about hope as a personal thing, and sometimes hope is, and God is in the community even when, if I have no hope, other people are hoping for me.
Yeah.
And that's where mm-hmm. I find, you know, and like you mentioned, they're making me get up. They're making, you know, Nikki said, making me get dressed and move forward. Other people are hoping for me and carrying me when I can't hope anymore myself
mm-hmm.
For a while. So hope has that personal thing, but also when you have none, that there's a community aspect to it. And that's where you see God as well and others. Even though you don't know it at the time, you probably don't recognize it at the time.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks for saying that, Bert. I think you're exactly right, especially when you're talking about young people. The young people that I love associating with and hanging around are totally committed to engaging the world for the better, and they are totally unencumbered by any sense of this will never work, that this won't happen. those thoughts don't enter their minds, and thank God for that. Because it starts with a dream. I'm grateful that I'm part of a faith tradition that takes dreams seriously. We read the Old Testament and the New Testament. Dreams are serious business. Those are oftentimes when God is mediating his own thoughts with us. And so I love the fact that our young people are such dreamers. One of my favorite hymns is "Praise to the Lord the Almighty." Ponder anew what the Almighty can do is a line that stops me dead in my tracks. Because it starts with a dream, but also with the knowledge that God isn't finished creating. And God, you know, it sounds cliche and it because it is, but God's not done with us yet. Where we are now is not where we have to be. And it starts by having a deep abiding hope and dreams for a better day.
Yeah, and reading our text, not just today, but the text in general, you know, a lot of us in our culture has the idea sometimes that the Bible was written and it's done in the past. And our United Church of Christ friends have this great saying, God is still speaking. And I love that God is still moving and the gospel is still living. God is still creating through us and in us, that we're part of the continuing redemption of the world, partnering with God. And I love that. And hearing scriptures, as what the faith element tries to do, get us to rethink and hear things in a different way than the way we've always told. Not that the way we've always learned it is wrong. It may be, it may not be. But trying to think differently about things, because it's not just something set in the past. New things are always happening, and that's where hope is. One of the things that are being promised in the text is that God's going to restore the monarchy. And the monarchy is never reestablished. Does that mean God's promise didn't work? Does that mean they hoped for naught? Or does that mean that as new things developed, their idea, their understanding of God and their hope found a new outlet? I mean, because things are not, even as we understand, if we think we understand God says this is going to happen for us, it may not happen that way. And how does that, you know, we still somehow find hope in it, something new, even when it's not what we thought we were going to get.
Yeah, in many ways it is that our hope is real because we believe that God really is still at work, tending the trees, pruning things, helping new things sprout. It is that ongoing work of God that brings newness, and that's why we can hope that even these huge systems in our world that seem so powerful and overwhelming and sometimes so evil, that they really, we may not feel like we can overcome them, but they can be overcome. Well, thank you so much for a fascinating conversation. Always learn something new when I get together with you folks. Thank you, Nikki and Bert and Daniel, for your time and for all these wonderful insights and conversation tonight.
Thank you, David.
Thanks a lot.
If you'd like to subscribe to our podcast on your mobile device, search for Faith Element on iTunes. Check out our show notes or learn more about Nikki, Bert, Daniel, or me at faithelement.net/podcast. That's faithelement.net/podcast. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.